Coelacanths, those living fossils you may remember from your childhood visits to the Museum of Natural History, have been around for 380 million years or so and are among the most enigmatic and rare fish on Earth. Earlier this year, scientists finished sequencing the coelacanth genome, and the project has provided precious clues into our evolutionary tree, including the revelation that the coelacanth is more closely related to us than to modern salmon. Samantha Weinberg, an assistant editor at Intelligent Life magazine, joins us now. We have a link to her article, A Fish for Our Time, on our show page, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Coelacanths have fins with bone structure similar to arms, and they give live birth. Is it completely accurate to even call them fish?
Yeah, they're definitely fish. So when they were first discovered, the scientists that first saw them weren't quite sure. They weren't sure if they were fishy reptiles or reptilian fishes, but when they looked more into how all their organs worked and how they lived, they realized that they were definitely fish.
How long ago was the first coelacanth caught?
The first coelacanth was caught off the coast of South Africa in 1938. They'd actually been caught before in the islands called the Comoros Islands, but this was the first time they'd been recognized. The coelacanth was known before from fossils, and it was believed to be our fishy ancestor, the first fish that evolved into, that crawled out of the sea to evolve into mammals and then into man eventually. But no one had found them. They thought the fossil record had disappeared 70 million years ago. And so a fish was caught one day in a trawler's catch off the coast of South Africa, and a young woman who was a curator of a museum down there saw that it was something funny, and something from old history lessons and biology lessons sort of clicked in her head, and she thought, whoa, this is something amazing. And she eventually got it identified by Professor J.L.B. Smith, who was a fantastic character, and he recognized it as a coelacanth, this fish that they thought had been extinct for 70 million years.
Do we still think of them as a link between fish and land animals?
Well, they're definitely a link. For a long time, scientists couldn't decide whether it was the coelacanth or another fish called the lungfish, which has lungs. So it also has some of our tetrapod attributes. Which one was our direct ancestor or was the closest living ancestor to the first fish that crawled out of the sea?
Don't lungfish live sometimes on land?
Yeah, they do. And they can estivate. They go to sleep in the summer in caked mud when there's no water around. So, but there's been sort of real debate over which one was the closest living ancestor or the closest living relation to our direct ancestor, and they couldn't decide. And then just this year they finished the sequencing the coelacanth genome, and they found that actually it wasn't the coelacanth. The lungfish was more closely related to us than the coelacanth was, but the coelacanth is still more closely related to us than it is to any other fish. And they can't sequence the lungfish genome because it's massive and complicated and tangled. So the coelacanth genome is an amazingly important tool and really, really exciting. I mean, what they found is amazing.
We've put a picture of a coelacanth on our website, but can you describe what they look like? How large can they get?
Well, they can get, I think the largest one is just over 2 meters long. They're heavy, they've got thick scales that are sort of bluish when they're alive, with sort of little white flecks. They've got these amazing shining eyes, and they have these funny limb-like fins with the fernish waving stuff on the end, and beautiful fins on the top. And they swim very, very slowly. They have a very slow metabolism, and they live very deep in the ocean. From 1938 until the late 1990s, they believed that they just lived off the coast of southern Africa and off the Comoros Islands, which are the East African coast. But in 1998, I think it was, they found a second population in Indonesia. It was found by an American scientist who was on his honeymoon.
So there are more out there than we originally imagined?
Yes, I mean, still not very many, I think. Sadly, not enough. But we don't know because they live so deep, and they're kind of shy creatures and don't come up very often. They come up to feed a bit during the night. We don't they don't get caught that often, luckily, because they're still rare and very precious.
You write about a microbiologist named Chris Amamiya who helps sequence the coelacanth's DNA. How is his team able to even get coelacanth specimens?
Well, it was an amazing story, this. It's very difficult to catch a coelacanth. No one has ever managed to keep one alive at the surface. But some scientists from South Africa, Rosemary Dorrington was the lead scientist, she was determined to go and get one. So she went to the Comoros Islands and she sort of said, hey, we need to catch a coelacanth. We need one for science. And she left behind this very, very simple kit for taking samples from the blood and from the genetic material of the coelacanth behind, and hoped that they could manage to keep one alive for long enough to be able to take these samples. And she left all sorts of instructions. And a coelacanth hadn't been caught, I think, for 2 years in the Comoros. And then 10 years ago, some fishermen caught one by accident. But they knew that this fish was valuable, and they knew that people were looking for it. So they took it to the coast, and they kept it alive for a bit. And then they called Saeed Ahamada, who is the Comoran scientist, who knew all about it. He rushed there, and they put the coelacanth in the boot of the car, and they rushed it back into town. And the Comoros is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's, you know, they don't have much in the way of equipment, or even they don't have sort of a reliable electricity supply or anything like that. But Saeed managed to take these samples before the fish had died, and he kept them very, very carefully. And then a few months later, he flew with them to South Africa. And it was in South Africa they announced with great fanfare that they'd found these important samples, that they had samples from a living coelacanth. So the coelacanth died immediately after they'd taken the samples. And Chris Amamiya found out about this, and because Chris, in South Africa, they didn't have the equipment to do the sequencing. So Chris said, hey, I'll take it over. And he assembled a team of scientists. I think there were several hundred scientists.
91 scientists from 40 institutes in 12 countries in all six inhabited continents.
I know. I mean, it's amazing. It's a truly global effort to do this. And together, they spent 10 years. And
it sounds like the Manhattan Project.
but it has a much happier
to obtain
ending.
Some fish DNA.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's a fantastic, wonderful, wonderful endeavor, and it just shows how exciting science is and can be.
Well, coelacanth DNA turns out to contain 3 billion base pairs. How does that compare to other animals?
Well, it's about the same as us. So it's 20 or 40 times smaller than the lungfish, but about the same as us, and it's a bit more than a mouse, I believe. You know, we all have sort of different numbers of base pairs, and some code into genes and some don't. They're what used to be called junk DNA. So what the scientists had to do, they used enormous numbers of machines at the Broad Institute, which is in Boston.
At the cost of billions of dollars. Millions of dollars.
Not billions.
Millions.
probably millions, but, you know, it's going to benefit science in a major way. And they spent a long time putting together these little bits of genomic sequencing. And from that, they identified the genes, and then they compared 251 genes with the same genes in 21 different creatures, from elephants and dogs and mice and sharks and humans, to find out which one was most closely related to us. And they found the coelacanth was close, but not as close as the lungfish. And then what they did is that was one major part of what they wanted to achieve. And then what they did is they zoned in on some of the coelacanth genes and compared those to tetrapod genes, to land-living creatures, to find out how coelacanths had evolved, how creatures that lived in the sea had evolved to start living on land. And they managed to sort of work out which genes had changed. And these were genes involved in immunity, involved in limb development, involved in nitrogen excretion, eye development, ear, tail, brain, the sense of smell, because, of course, that's very different underwater and on land. So they can actually identify what genes changed and how in order to make us able to live on land.
Well, haven't scientists also inserted coelacanth genes into mice embryos? What were they hoping to discover by doing that?
Well, because they couldn't study a living coelacanth, they didn't know how these genes could be turned on and off. So they took some coelacanth genes from the fins, and they inserted it into the right place in the mouse genome to see whether those same genes could cause fingers to grow. Because coelacanths have so the equivalent of our upper arms and lower arms, but they don't have fingers. And they found that these same genes could be turned on to make fingers grow. So those genes are there in coelacanths. They're not there in sharks. They're not there in zebrafish. But they are there in coelacanths. So coelacanths are definitely
they have the
on
potential.
The way to, they have the potential. They have sort of finger potential.
And next thing we'll find out is that they have the ability to put their thumb together with their first finger. But
I don't know yet.
But so have we learned an awful lot about evolution just from doing the sequencing?
We have, but there's a huge amount more to learn. And what the scientists have done, Chris and his team, they've put the coelacanth genome, the sequence genome, on the web. Any scientist can use it. And there's going to be, I mean, this is going to take years and years and years, but they're going to zone in on the different genes and find out an enormous amount about evolution, where we came from, how we changed, how we came to read, see, think, move.
We don't have much time left, but a listener wonders where they are in the food chain since they've stayed the same for so long.
Well, that's exactly why they have stayed the same for so long. They don't have many predators. They live very deep where not many predators live. They eat little fish, so they come up near the surface to feed, but there's not many things down there that feed on coelacanths, and they hide away in caves during the daytime. So they're pretty safe. Their only real predator is man.
Samantha Weinberg is an assistant editor at Intelligent Life magazine. She wrote an article called A Fish for Our Time, and you can find a link to it on our show page at wnyc.org. Samantha, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.